In our study tonight, we're continuing to talk about the history and geography of the Bible. Like I said, if you'll get your lesson sheets out and turn to page number 8 in your lesson book, that should be helpful to us as we begin our study. We're not going to go back and review very much in our studies because we've got a whole lot of things that I want to talk with you about, and I hope that our efforts will be helpful to you and we'll all benefit and so forth. But in our study tonight, we're simply wanting to identify the parallel areas of the land that we're studying because we're going to be using these terms quite frequently in our study. We're talking about the coastal plain as we see these parallel areas, the hill country, the Jordan River Valley, and the Transjordan Plateau, and then, of course, the Arabian Desert that is not really that very desirable. But in our study tonight, we want to consider the area of Palestine as we discuss in the beginning the coastal plain. The coastal plain is generally divided into three different portions. It's divided into the plain of Phoenicia, as you see on the north, that includes Tyre and Sidon. And it includes this middle portion, identified as the plain of Sharon. We're going to talk about these in just a moment. And then down at the southern end, the plain of Philistia. Now, as you look at these three areas of the coastal plain, you recognize the names of many of these places, and we're going to discuss them again in some detail as we get to them. I hope that you see at this point we're simply laying the groundwork for more familiarity with the area of the Bible lands. And so when we look at the top portion of this, the plain, I'm sorry, let me get back to that other chart, the plain of Phoenicia. You'll note that it is a very narrow area. When you think of Tyre and Sidon, you think of areas where there were seaports. And when you consider how narrow this is, certainly it wasn't the kind of place that you could farm. And when you consider the plain of Sharon and the plain of Philistia, these were the well-watered plains. And I think you can see why, as the area from the hill country, from the sea, was really not all that far, but it only had an elevation deviation of about 200 to 400 feet in elevation. And so that's not very much. It made a great place for irrigation, great place for farming. And so we want to call our attention to that. When we look just north of Mount Carmel, we find the plain of Acho, which leads down to the area of Jezreel. Now, Jezreel is a place that we're going to talk about considerably in our study. As you look on this map, you'll note a number of plains and valleys as you weave your way through some of this elevation coming down to the Jordan River. And that's going to be a very significant place in our study as well. But as we talked about the northern portion of Phoenicia, my understanding is that it's only about 6 miles in width. That would be hard to farm, would it not? So this area was predominantly for trade. And when you consider the plain of Sharon, about 12 to 25 miles in width. And so it made a very fertile place with all of the off-pouring or downstream from the mountains or the higher elevation of about 3,000 feet as you get to the city of Jerusalem. So here again, it shows that from the coastline over to the rolling hills is only about 200 to 300 feet in elevation. Made a great place for farming. Well watered, very fertile land, and so it was very productive. Again, to get a feel of the size of the land, from Tyre to Sidon was only about 20 miles. From Joppa to Mount Carmel, only about 45 miles. And then from Gaza up to Joppa, only about 40 miles. So we're not talking about a very big place, but yet a very productive place in these southern plains. I want to call your attention in particular tonight to Mount Carmel.
I don't have this identified on any of our maps, but I understand that there's only about 200 yards from this end of Mount Carmel to the sea. Now, you see why that would be very significant as far as military purposes would be concerned. If you were trying to hold on to this land and you were trying to take an army around this way, you would only have about 200 yards to travel, and consequently you would be sitting ducks. But as you travel through some of these travel ways, the way of Shur, the way of the sea, the way of Shur, and of course over here, going to Damascus, you would find that you would travel through this area of Esdraelon and Jezreel, and in particular this little place called Megiddo. And so that became a very significant place for wars among the people of God with those who inhabited the land. And you'll note where the Canaanites settled in the plains, and the people of Israel had trouble driving the Canaanites out of the plains. They were well settled there. And so the Israelites were content to go to the hill country and to settle and dwell there. Now, I want you to see this trade route, the way of the sea. Did you notice how that goes? It goes right up through that little narrow pass, which, as we discussed in our last study, whoever owned this little narrow pass controlled what? Control the trade. You had the commerce of that area. And so consequently, this was a very desirable place, well thought after, for that very reason. Now, when we think of the hill country, I don't know, Richard is working on this for us, if you can see how light this is here in the middle. This is to display the rolling hills of the West Jordan portion of the map. Now, let's just suppose that you were an Israelite who had come up out of the land of Egypt. And you came into this land and saw that it was well watered. And you saw the tremendous and fertile growth that existed in this land. Having been used to some of the drier areas in Egypt where crops were irrigated, and you came up here and you found natural irrigation, wouldn't you find that very desirable? And as you come into this land and you discovered that not only was there natural irrigation, but there were also springs of water, wouldn't you find that a very desirable place to live? Open your Bible, if you will, to Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, Randy, would you do some reading for me, please? Beginning in verse 1 through verse 10. And Terry, if you would please, be ready with Deuteronomy 11, verses 10 and 11. All right, Randy, please. Yes. All right, as we look at these blessings that were to be found in the land of Canaan, sounds wonderful, doesn't it? Having experienced this period of time, 38 years, I think, from the time of their the time of the spies until the time that they actually went into the land, 40 years in all coming out of Egypt, this would sound so desirable. Now, the thing that is impressive to me, not only here, but in the warning of Deuteronomy chapter 6, when you come in and you begin to partake of things that you have not labored to have, you come in and you live in houses that you didn't build. You begin to partake of vineyards that you didn't plant. And all of the blessings and the fruit of this land that you did not labor to have, then beware lest you forget God. Now therein lies the warning. In the next few verses there, Randy, you'll see the same thing essentially in this chapter. Beware lest thou forget Jehovah thy God, in not keeping His commandments and His ordinances and His statutes which I command thee this day, lest when thou hast eaten and art full and hast built goodly houses and dwell therein, and when thy herds and thy flocks multiply, and thy silver and thy gold is multiplied, and all that thou hast is multiplied, then thy heart be lifted up, and thou forget Jehovah thy God, who brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Coming from Egypt, coming from slavery, wandering in the wilderness for all these many years, and then the privilege of coming into such a lush land. Think of the temptation to forget God. Terry, the passage in chapter 11, verses 10 and 11, please. Sounds wonderful, doesn't it? This is the land that God has promised to give them, and this is the blessings that are to be found right here in these rolling hills that God has promised to give them. Now, the hill country west of the Jordan became an Israelite stronghold. We've talked about the plains down near the plains of Sharon, how that the Canaanites were well grounded in that, well rooted in that. But the hill country was easier to defend. In Judges chapter 1, let's look at some of these. Judges chapter 1 in verse 19. Chris, would you mind to read that for me, please? Judges chapter 1, verse 19. And Joey, would you be ready for me, please, with Joshua 16 and 17, as you see the verses on the board, please. That's Joshua 16, verse 10, and 17, verses 12 through 18. Can you see those? Okay, please. Judges chapter 1, Chris, please, verse 19.
Now the Lord was with Judah, and they took possession of the hill country, but they could not drive out the inhabitants of the valley because they had iron chariots.
All right, now why couldn't they drive them out? We say, well, because they had iron chariots. What was the real reason? They were lazy. That's right. They didn't have faith. But they left this to the Canaanites because they didn't believe God. They could have driven out everybody. God had promised them that. Joey, Joshua 16, verse 10, and then 17, 12 through 18, please. Ephraim. Mm-hmm. All right. So they didn't drive out the Canaanites. Could have, but didn't. Joshua chapter 17, 12 through 18, please. All right, what's the problem? Lack of faith. Please, keep reading, Joey.
And the children of Joseph why have you given us only one lot and one share to inherit, since we are a great people and as much as the Lord has blessed us until now? So Joshua answered them, if you are a great people, then go up to the forest country and clear a place for yourself there in the land of the Perizzites and the giants, since the mountains of Ephraim are too confined for you. But the children of Joseph said, the mountain country is not enough for us, and all the Canaanites who dwell in the land of the valley have chariots of iron, both those who are of Bethshan and its town, and those who are of the valley of Jezreel. And Joshua spoke to the house of Joseph, to Ephraim and Manasseh, saying, you are a great people and have great power. You shall not have only one lot. But the mountain country shall be yours. Although it is wooded, you shall cut it down, and its farthest extent shall be yours, for you shall drive out the Canaanites, though they have iron chariots and are strong.
All right, God assured them, you can do this. You can drive them out. Why didn't they? It wasn't simply because of the strength of the Canaanites, but because, as you pointed out, they didn't believe God. Look at the land that they could have had if they had just believed what God said, but they did not. When we consider further the hill country, west of Jordan became an Israelite stronghold. I want you to look on this map and note, please, if you would, the mountain range near the sea up here called the Lebanon Mountains. Does that ring some bells to you? The Lebanon Mountains. What were the Lebanon Mountains known for? All right, they're cedars, the trees that were there. That's right. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. Hold that thought and how they got it down to build the temple. But this was about 10,000 feet above sea level here. When we go over to the other side of, what was the Leontes River, we see the anti-Lebanon mountains. And most of the time, this was considered the northern boundary of the land of Palestine. Now, let's go back and talk about these cedars. Randy, would you read for me 1 Kings chapter 5? Let me set the stage for you, the things that you're going to be reading. In that text, you recall that David wanted to build the temple of the Lord. But David could not do that. Why? He was a man of war, too much blood shed by his hands. But he said, your son Solomon will do that. Now look at where Jerusalem is down here. Hiram, the king, up here was going to furnish the wood to build the temple of God. But look at the country it would have to come through. All the mountains and the streams and the plains and areas where the Canaanites were, great difficulty to build such huge structures. As Solomon, I say structures, because he was not only to build the temple, but he was to build the king's palace of the materials that King Hiram was to supply for him. Now, if you will, please, Randy, read 1 Kings 5, verses 8 through 9 for me. All right, now that's interesting. We see that King Hiram has a price for what he is going to supply. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But what we learn is that King Hiram said, we'll cut the trees down, we'll build them on rafts, put them into the sea, and float them down to wherever you tell us. I don't know where that was, maybe you do. And then they would be brought over to the city of Jerusalem, where the temple and the king's palace would be built. Now, it's not my purpose this evening to talk about the size of the temple or the size of Solomon's palace, but perhaps it's a given to say it would take a lot of logs to build this. And so they were furnished by King Hiram from the mountains of Lebanon. Now, we noted that King Hiram was to receive a payment for the logs that he supplied. What did he receive? So it said, going to receive food. But we're also going to note, I don't have it located in the order of charts that I wanted just here, but we'll pick it up perhaps in the next chart, what also was given to him and how he considered it. He was not happy at all with what King Solomon offered or gave him in payment for what he did. But I want to call your attention at this point to the Leontes River. Leontes River. Look at how it runs. Now what it does, essentially, is it creates a barrier from here to here. Do you see that? From the Phoenician coastline down to the area of Israel, Upper Galilee. Now, Dan is a city that ought to sound very familiar to you, as we often describe the land of Israel and the Bible as well, from Dan to Beersheba. Sound familiar? From Dan to Beersheba. Here's Dan located on this map up in the northern portion of the land of Israel near Mount Hermon. As we continue to talk about the hill country, I want to talk with you a little bit about Galilee. Galilee was a 50-mile section from the Leontes River to the valley of Jezreel. Now again, I want you to look on your map in your book, as well as perhaps looking at this one and noting this area of Upper and Lower Galilee. Upper Galilee was a high, rugged area from 2,000 to 4,000 feet above sea level. It actually became the foothills, as it were, of the Lebanon Mountains, the Leontes River running through. Lower Galilee was more rounded hills, and it reached an elevation of about 700 feet sea level. In fact, it was in the area of Lower Galilee where Jesus did a great deal of his teaching and preaching during his life upon the earth. Now, here's where we were regarding King Hiram. 20 cities were given by Solomon to King Hiram, who supplied the trees for Solomon to build the house of God and the king's house. Why was Hiram not pleased? When he came and looked at what Solomon had given him, how did he consider it? He didn't like it. He wasn't pleased. Didn't like the city. So he called them Kabul. What's that mean? Good for nothing. Yeah, good for nothing. Now, Solomon had really given him something. Gave him something good for nothing. We simply want to note here the city of Hazor. I've got labeled in these parentheses the first city to be taken by enemies. I want you to look at where it is. You see the trade route? The way of the sea as it branches off here at Megiddo, but look at where it goes. So if any of the countries coming from the area of Mesopotamia was coming into the area to conquer the Israelite people or anyone that was among them, what was the first city to go? The city of Hazor. Right there in the way. Right there. See it on your map? Yeah, just above the Sea of Galilee. Just south of Lake Hula. Thank you. Couldn't hardly read it. All right. Again, as we talk about Galilee, we mentioned that this is the area where Jesus did the most of his work. Lower Galilee averaged about 700 feet above sea level. And here are some pictures. And again, if we had a real good display up here, we could see these areas. Of course, Richard's going to fix that for us, I'm sure. I have every confidence. But if you look on your computer, I would be interested in you doing that, by the way, doing a Google search and look at the Sea of Galilee.
you'll find that it's much like many of the lakes that that we know of that are not too far from the area where we are. And you'll note that the main industry around the Sea of Galilee would naturally be fishing. And so as we study more about that, we'll talk more about that, I'm sure. Again, the hill country around this area, the Valley of Jezreel. This was a series of valleys and plains that come together. The western portion of this plain is drained by the Kishon River and empties into the sea. And again, I want you to notice the waterways. Up here, we were talking about the Leontes River. Here, we're talking about the Kishon River. And look at the elevation and how that it drains the area into the sea. It goes out just north of Mount Carmel here. And once again, look where Megiddo is. Another thing that I want to call your attention to is it's in this area of the Valley of Jezreel called up here Esdraelon, where the city of Nazareth was located, and that, of course, is where Jesus grew up. As we continue to talk about this hill country, yes, Terry? No, I don't. Juan, you have your little, would you Google that for me and see what the size of the Sea of Galilee was? That would be most helpful. I appreciate it. Thank you. This Valley of Jezreel was one of the most important sections commercially as well as militarily. And why? Look again. Here's your sea. Or your the way of the sea, trade route. Here's the way of Shur, trade route. What does it go through? This Valley of Jezreel. Would it surprise you that not only are we talking about numerous battles that took place here in Megiddo, but battles that took place in the Valley of Jezreel? We'll have occasion to talk about some of them, and again, you'll know why. Turn, if you will, to Judges chapter 7, and look with me in verse 33. David, would you mind to read that for me, please? Judges chapter 7, verse 33. Let's set the stage, if we might, for the text of Judges chapter 7. Well, first of all, let's set the stage for the book of Judges. How many verses does my Judges have? Well, it should be Judges chapter 8. Let me find the verse. Well, just hang on there, David. I'll get you in a second. I've got the wrong verse up here, it looks like. Yes, thank you. Judges 6, 33. Yes. Yes, please. All right, what are we reading in the text of Judges chapter 6? First of all, let's set the stage for what the book of Judges is about. Who wants to do that? The book of Judges. What's it about? Can you be just a wee bit more specific? Pardon me? There's a cycle that they go around. They were faithful. All right, go for me. Yeah?
And
All right, that's right. Now, as we come to the sixth chapter, what's going on? Verse 1. David, while you have your Bible open there, would you read for me verses 1 through 6, please? Right, not good, was it? Because of their rebellion, the Midianites had made life very uncomfortable for them. And they're hiding in the mountains and the caves trying to preserve even life. Now, as you continue down through this text, who did God select to be the judge to deliver them from the Midianites? Gideon. Now, Gideon did not consider himself all that important. As you'll drop down in the text to verse 15, God said, he said to God, O Lord, wherewith shall I save Israel? Behold, my family is the poorest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house. And Jehovah said unto him, Surely I will be with thee, and thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man. And we can, of course, continue to talk about how that Gideon was convinced to go and fight against them. But when you drop down into verse 33 of chapter 6, it says there, David, the passage that you read, all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the children of the east assembled themselves together, and they passed over and encamped in the valley of Jezreel. Now, that tells us where this battle took place. And we know where because we've got it up here on the map. So this battle that Gideon was about to engage in took place in Jezreel. Now, how did the battle transpire? What was the outcome of it? Well, the Midianites were routed. That's true. But as we look at the plan of God and the leadership of Gideon, what did he do to get rid of the Midianites? Remember? Chris? That's the one. That's the one. That's the one. And so Gideon said, look upon me and do like I do. He broke them up into three companies. He gave them pitchers and torches and what else? Trumpets. Right. Where's their sword? Didn't need one. That's right. And what did Gideon do to get rid of all those people? Lynn? Go ahead. Somebody. Carolyn?
All right. Midianites.
Okay.
So that they could be visible.
Yeah.
And basically, they caused confusion, if I remember.
Well, yeah. A good way to illustrate that, Carolyn, I think, is with flashlights. You see, if you want the flashlight off, you pull the button back. If you want it on, you push it forward. And here, they didn't have a flashlight. But they could conceal the torch in the pitcher, and when they wanted to show the light or turn the light on, remove or break the pitcher, and you could show the light. Now, what was the purpose of all of that? Well, you've only got 300 people. But look around Jezreel.
What do we find around it? Mountains. Now, if you've got 300 people scattered about on these mountains, all of them with lights and trumpets, and their lights all come on at the same time, and the trumpets start blowing all at the same time, and the people shouting with a great shout all at the same time. If you were encamped down here in Jezreel, what in the world would you think's about to happen? That's right. That's right. You wouldn't think there's only 300 men up there on those mountains. But Gideon had them surrounded with 300 men, and he put them to flight. Now, when you see that on the map, I hope that that takes on added significance. We're not talking about just a flat area out here where Gideon surrounded them, but when you consider the mountain range and where Jezreel was, the story of Gideon comes alive. You see what Gideon is doing. And that, of course, by the plan of God. That makes this valley one of the most important areas in the land that God gave unto the people of God. And again, notice the trade route went right up through this area, through Megiddo, up through the valley of Jezreel. Now let's look again at our map and talk about the central hill country. We note that this is the area that we've identified as Samaria. And it has some peaks that run up about 3,000 feet in elevation. We've got Mount Gilboa, Mount Ebal, or how do you pronounce that, Richard? Ebal. All right, and then we've got Mount Gerizim in this area of the central hill country. Now, some of these places may not sound so familiar to you, but Mount Gerizim ought to. When we read in John chapter 4, we read of a Samaritan woman, and you see again why. Look at where Samaria is. A Samaritan woman, and as Jesus and some were traveling, they came by this area, and no doubt along this trade route, most likely, and look at what's nearby, Mount Gerizim. And this woman, Samaritan woman, Jesus begins to discuss some things with her. And how is the conversation introduced? What does she, or what does Jesus desire from her? A drink of water. Well, that upsets her. Why does that upset her? All right. John chapter 4, verse 4 says, "For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." You just don't talk to each other. But Jesus had requested of her a drink of water. Why do you have your Bible open to John chapter 4? Look at verse 10. "Jesus answered and said unto her, If thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith unto thee, Give me to drink, thou would have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water." Verse 11, John 4. "And the woman saith unto him, Sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Whence then hast thou that living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well, and drank thereof himself, and his sons, and his cattle?" I want to pause right there, not only because of where we're talking about, but the lessons we learn in this geographical location. This woman says, Jews don't have any dealings with Samaritans. How did Jesus respond to her argument? Did he argue with her? Did he answer? All right, that doesn't have anything to do with Jews talking to Samaritans, though. Jesus has talked with her about something far greater than her prejudicial question or statement. That's right. Jesus just simply doesn't answer her prejudicial statement. Just doesn't answer it. There's something far greater that he wants to communicate to her. Now, when
The woman said, or when Jesus spoke of living water, the woman then said, you don't have anything to draw with, and the well is deep. Who do you think you are? Do you think you're greater than Jacob, who gave us the well? Now, not getting it yet. The woman is still being argumentative. She's still setting forth statements of prejudice. Jews don't have anything to do with Samaritans. You think you're better than Jacob. She don't get it, as Carolyn said. No. No. She just doesn't get it. In verse 13, Jesus answered and said unto her, everyone that drinketh of this water shall thirst again. But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst, but the water that I shall give him shall become in him a well of water, springing up unto eternal life. Now look at verse 15. He's got the interest of this woman now. It says, the woman said unto him, sir, give me this water, that I thirst not, neither come all the way hither to draw. What is it that this woman, in all likelihood, does about every day? She goes to the well to get water. Now wouldn't it be a grand thing if she didn't have to do that anymore? She thinks that's what Jesus is talking to her about. I want some of this. But he's got her interest. Read further. It says in verse 16, Jesus saith unto her, go call thy husband and come hither. And the woman answered and said unto him, I have no husband. And Jesus saith unto her, thou saidest well, I have no husband, for thou hast had five husbands, and he whom thou now hast is not thy husband. This hast thou said truly. The woman saith unto him, sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and ye say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. This mountain. Where did the Samaritans worship? Mount Gerizim. They worshipped in Mount Gerizim. Now it's important, I believe, hold your finger there in John chapter 4, we're coming right back to it, but to see why the Samaritans worshipped in Mount Gerizim. Turn, if you will, in your Old Testament to 2 Kings chapter 17. 2 Kings chapter 17. David, do you mind reading for me? Please, would you read for me again, reading beginning in verse 28. No, I'm sorry. Begin, if you will, at verse... begin at verse 25, please. Yes, well, 25 and 26. Chapter 17, 25 and 26. The people had a misunderstanding about God. Those among the Assyrians, they had a real ugly practice. When they would conquer another nation, they would take anybody who was anybody and scatter him out or scatter these people out among other nations that they had conquered. The idea was it would prevent any kind of an uprising or rebellion. But they've also now imported people from other nations into the land of Canaan. And having imported these people into the land of Canaan who have idolatrous practices, when they bring them into the land of Canaan, the lions begin to eat them. And their explanation is, we don't know the God of this land. Again, their attitude is idolatry. We don't know the God of this land. They think there's a God of the hills, a God of the mountains, a God of the sea, and we don't know the God of the Israelites. And so we're being eaten up by lions. Well, the king of Assyria got an idea, got a solution to this problem. What will we do?
we'll send one of the priests of Israel back to educate you about the God of this land. Now, David, we want to find out what this priest taught them. Look, if you would, please, in verse 28 through verse 33, and don't worry about some of those words that are hard to pronounce. That's not our focus. Drop down to verse 32, please.
I'll skip on to 32.
Yes, please.
So they feared the Lord and made themselves the Lord of the priests of the high places to sacrifice for them in the houses of the high places. They feared the Lord, served their own gods, and after the manner of nations, and they carried away from thence.
All right, let's pause right there. This priest has come down, right? He's to educate them about the God of this land that they live in. What's the result of his efforts to teach them? What are they doing now?
Worshipping
both. They're worshipping their own gods, and they're worshipping the God that this priest has taught them about. Now here's the question. Why do they do that? What is it that this priest has taught them, Jenny? He didn't know a whole lot about God. So he has displayed God to them as one of the many gods. He's just another idol, God, as it were. And the Samaritans, therefore, though they worshipped God, they worshipped on Mount Gerizim, one of the high places where they had their idolatrous idols or temples placed. Now look, if you will, back at the text of John chapter 4 once more. Do I have about 2 minutes? Maybe? Got 1 minute. Pardon me? I ask Juan a question, yes. Square miles of Sea of Galilee. 64.09. Square miles. Yeah. Thank you, Juan. Well, when you consider the square miles and the depth, it was not really all that big of a place. Yeah. It was big enough to catch a lot of fish. Yeah. Okay. That's right.